This is the Teachable Soul Podcast. Because we cannot possibly live long enough to make all the mistakes ourselves, let's take a few moments to learn from the mistakes of others. The Teachable Soul Podcast, where guests and listeners like you share stories of failure and teachable moments on the journey to success. Here's your host, Kat Daniels.
Welcome to the Teachable Soul Podcast. I am your host, of course, Kat Daniels. And today with me, I have two very special guests from Positively Midwest Podcast. Welcome with me, please, Kat and Steve Jurens. Thank you for joining me this evening.
Thank you so much for having us, Kat.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. I had to have you on after we had such a wonderful conversation on your podcast. And so I hope that we can continue a tradition.
Yeah, definitely be awesome to do kind of little follow-ups or collaborations on specific subjects or something.
Yes, that would be phenomenal. Yeah. So do you guys want to start by just going into like how you started or when you started the podcast?
Yeah. So I think it's been a little over a year now, and really it just started with one day I was kind of sitting there looking through Facebook and was sick of a lot of the negativity that was out there. And granted, it was kind of a political year, but a lot of politics, just it seemed stuff I was sick of looking at. And so I thought, well, what if we started a group and then we can invite people and keep a small circle and just kind of try to inspire each other. And then we started to think, well, why don't we just expand this further? I'm thinking if it was a group, for one, people are going to get notifications when we do put a post out there. So then it turned out to be public. So then we started to invite people, and now we're a little over 1,700 people in the group. And we've got a regular page on Facebook too, which we kind of had to have in order to link it to our website and stuff. So, right. But anyways, aside from that, it was mainly just an idea of trying to help inspire others through some of our stories, through some of our experiences and problems, really, and how we've overcome them. And then as I kind of progressed in doing more consistent therapy, we thought, you know, I've always wanted to do a podcast because I love radio and the tradition of that audio and listening to it. And even sometimes wondering what people look like, except now you can go on social media and see what we look like and everything. But
right.
Anyways, it was just really, you know, as much positivity as you can keep top of mind, I think it really makes people slowly but surely change their mindset.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. So you guys started with the group and then went into the podcast,
yeah,
right?
That was kind of something I always wanted to do, but then it developed, I think, further from there. We bought a $30-some microphone on Amazon, and then I pulled Catherine in here and just plugged it into the USB one day, and technically is our first episode that's like 14 minutes long or something. But then I just wanted Catherine more and more involved as I did one interview. And then it just kind of, now I really appreciate her perspective, because you'll probably learn, especially if you listen to us over time. I mean, we're quite different people. So maybe the true opposites attract. So it's real interesting sometimes to see her perspective on something, and then we try to go from there.
That is a very good point. I actually just wrote an article about my husband and I and how like we're opposites attract as well. So I will get your input on a question that I had in there. But first, Kat, you were just kind of dragged along for the ride.
Yeah. So it started like this was going to be his thing. The group was amazing. It was just one way for us to help inspire others and lift people's spirits and spread a little bit of joy. When he started the podcast, that was going to be kind of his thing, but it was like ripping open some of our band-aids, in a sense, some of our wounds, to show others, while we have not always been perfect, while we've gone through some hardships, like how you can overcome, how you can find this positivity. And I had someone go, so your husband is just talking about your guys' marriage and you're okay with that? And I'm like, well, I guess. Yeah. And they're like, so now you're just along for the ride? I'm like, yeah, I guess I am. But it's a healing thing. So it's one of those things that it's healing for us as we are working through our own journey. But it's also been amazing to hear the feedback as people are also healing and getting help while they listen to us as they're working through their own journeys.
Oh, yeah.
And so while, yeah, I was kind of along for the ride, and I totally embraced it. It's been incredible so far.
Right. Yeah. That's still a little funny though. Yeah. I come in here and talk about my husband all the time, but I don't think he actually listens to the podcast, and which is kind of a good thing probably, but I did do an episode with him and it's actually one of my biggest episodes, but that's mostly, I think, because we talk about like being neurodivergent and not like I'm technically considered neurotypical and he's not. So yeah, he's technically on the spectrum, right. But that was the only reason for that. So what are the favorite topics that you guys like to discuss either on your podcast or with like your friends and strangers in private?
I think that one of my passions, I know, is just mental health awareness in general. Mm-hmm. Addiction, that's something that's personal to me. You know, you listen to some of our episodes and talk about that and how I grew up. So I really wanted to break down the stigma of that. And, you know, that's where Catherine can be helpful with that too, because we were both raised very differently. We're both 36 and high school sweethearts, but my parents are in their mid-50s. Hers are in her mid-70s. So it's kind of a different traditional Midwest, some stigmas out there. And as I started to grow and evolve and learn more about psychology and just positivity, that's kind of one of the biggest missions or part of our content is breaking down some of that, making mental health awareness more common and educational. And it's, I don't think people will go out there and necessarily search it. So if we have a filler, that's a good episode. Like we've done one with our kids, a couple episodes with that. And Catherine's picked out some of her own topics she's wanted to talk about. But I think overall it's anything we can find that gives a unique perspective on positivity and engages your thoughts. Even if it's something you don't disagree with, we want to be as unbiased as possible, but give you something to just spin on. Go do your own research and I guess learn as much as you can and then develop your own opinion from that. So
like overriding their mindset, you know, we talk a lot about mindset and how if you dwell in the negative, you're going to have more negative fed into you and you're going to find more negativity being drawn into your life. So it's about overriding it, kind of like that whole finding your silver lining on things. So we talk about, okay, change your mindset here, find your gratitude in this life, in this situation, you went through something hard, something bad happened, not to going to plan. Now, what can you take from that? Find your gratitude and how can you turn that into, as you've always said, your teachable moment, but how do you turn that into a positive now into your life, inspiring yourself and inspiring others to go forward and come out the other end stronger?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's phenomenal. It's funny because we have my husband and I, we're not high school sweethearts, but technically I did meet him for the first time when I was 14 years old. So, but also it's funny because like my parents, they were in their 60s and 70s and his parents are just now getting into their 60s and in their late 50s. And we're very much opposites attract as well, like I said before. So one of the things that I wanted to get your guys' take on, I guess, is my husband and I mean, because we're so opposite in so many different ways, we have obviously fought hard over the years, both with and for each other. But one day we were having a conversation and he asked me, he was like, how, because I grew up in a family where like my parents were both divorced. I never saw my dad with anyone except for my mom, really. He had a girlfriend, I think, one time, but that was very short-lived. And so I never really saw him in a spousal role at all. And then my mom, the only time I ever saw a positive person that she was married to was by the time I was like 12 years old. And my husband's parents have been married his whole life, like as far as he can remember anyway, since he was like 4 years old. So he asked me one day, he was like, where did you get your idea of like marriage and what you wanted in a relationship and yada, yada, yada. And I was like, well, I don't know, I guess I partially my stepdad, obviously, but also movies and TV shows. Like you see things that you idolize or that you enjoy or that you think you want out of life as you grow up and you try to implement those things into your life. And I was like, and besides the fact, it's not so much that I know what I want, it's that it's more actually that I know that what I don't want for sure. There are certain boundaries that we are not crossing. Mm-hmm. But later I came to the conclusion that there was one specific thing in my stepdad and my mom's relationship that I really, really loved about their relationship. And so I had to ask him what the one, my husband, what the one specific thing in his parents' relationship was. And our two things were completely different. So have you guys had a conversation like that?
Well, I don't know. Maybe to some degree. I mean, certainly early on, because I think I had an idea of what I thought I wanted. Mm. And it was probably based off of my parents. They got divorced when I was like 5 and they were quite young when I was born. So I don't know. There was a lot of arguing and a lot of alcohol and different things like that. And I think I thought, like, I want the white picket fence, kind of get married to the first person I love and it's the love of my life and all these things. But where I started to make mistakes was I still had a lot of that traditional Midwest. Well, and it's just old school, not necessarily Midwest, but the man's the man, the woman's the woman, cook clean, kind of listen on to your husband and things like that. But I was more domineering and narcissistic about it too, on top of that. So not thinking I could do wrong. So that's when we started to have the issues and things would develop from there. So at first I thought it was what I didn't want. I learned through my parents what not to do, but then ended up screwing it all up anyways. And now, thank God, we've come out the other side way, way better. So I don't know what Catherine's thoughts are on that, but
my parents have been married for 55 years this year, and Stephen's dad is only 55. So it's kind of that different spectrum.
Yeah.
So since Stephen and I have been together since we were 16 years old, I kind of watched how his parents were at such a young age when we were starting our relationship and seeing their family dynamic and how they were, and then seeing how mine was and how my parents worked together side by side as farmers. They've always been complete partnership. I knew that my mom was the one that cooked and cleaned and did that work always around the house. And that was kind of her role. And I said, I didn't want to be that. I wanted to have more of a partnership than what my mom had in that spec. But my parents argued, but my mom always taught me that a key to a good marriage was having that argument, and that if a marriage goes quiet, that's when there's trouble. Mm. And so it was like, I learned from that perspective. And then I learned from like the younger generation of Stephen's parents and their marriage of seeing things maybe not go as smooth. So I saw more, I learned from the problems that could happen in marriage, watching like some of Stephen's parents and their hardships that they went through in their marriages, where I didn't see or know any of that growing up on my side. And so while I knew I wanted like the strength and the commitment of my parents, I knew that I wanted more of a 50-50 partnership that I didn't see in these other relationships. And it took a while of fighting for it, but we got it finally. Well, we always talk to people about don't give up, keep communicating, because then the more you communicate about what you each want in your marriage, the healthier your marriage will be.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely a process to like actually get to a point where you can both be equally happy, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what is the one thing in the relationships that you both saw growing up that you definitely wanted going into a relationship that you are in now, I guess?
My parents talk about everything. When they're going to go out, when they have to pay bills, when they have to do that kind of stuff with the farm, they would sit together. And it's like they were always communicating about the financial stuff. They were always communicating about problems that were coming up for work in that sense, or the family. And then it was like seeing how my parents were there for us as kids, constantly supportive. And it was like, that was like what I really wanted.
I'm not sure how to even answer that question myself, because it was more like what I didn't want. But I think through some observations, probably more often in my dad's second marriage, and bits and pieces of my mom too, I mean, but there was fun, just trying to have fun. So I'm always about let's create memories. Let's go out and do stuff together. I always want to go hiking. I want to go kayaking. I want to do the stuff. Let's go disc golfing. Let's go. But I always want to, I'm always trying to get Catherine to do stuff with me all the time, even if it's ditching the kids and, or bringing them with, but you right. know, like, I just feel like I always want her around me, which is also something I didn't do a good job of in the beginning. So it's, but that's something my dad and stepmom did. They always kind of would try to find some kind of activities that we could all do, or always messing with each other and stuff. So we kind of right. emulate some of that, I think, maybe.
Do you find that those things correlate with your top like love languages?
Yeah, yes and no, because mine overall, I think, is affirmation, words of affirmation, and you are...
acts of service.
Yeah, so, I mean, we get better at those as we, especially the last couple of years, but I don't know. I mean, sort of, because maybe where I'm mixing the two, if I'm trying to say, hey, let's go do this together, we're stepping outside of our comfort zone, with it, which is growth. We're doing it together, which is growth. And then she's like, hey, that was fun. Good idea. So then I get my stuff out of it. And it's an actual physical thing sometimes. So maybe that's her service. I don't know.
But you and like Stephen did not grow up with words of affirmation, I don't think, in his home life mm-hmm. as much, quite honestly. So maybe what his top words of affirmation is what he's seeking the most and that he didn't get enough of. And so now that's what he strives for, is those positive words of love, in a sense, is what I think his are.
Mm-hmm.
And mine with my acts of service is because my mom really would bend over backwards for anybody, wanting to constantly be a helper to people and to be there for them and that form of support. So I think that's where I get mine from. And so it's like, I think I get mine from what I received, and I think Stephen gets his from what he didn't receive, if that makes any sense.
No, yeah, absolutely. It does. I can't say that's the same for us, because I feel like when my husband and I first got married, he used to say, oh, in my family, we hug all the time. But me and his best friend have joked often about how he just wasn't hugged enough as a kid, because now it makes him extremely uncomfortable to like hug or have anybody physically touch him. And that's unfortunately my top love language. So I don't know if that's because, I mean, we still haven't really figured out if that's just because it was something that he lacked at the time, or if it's because he just got enough of it. And now he's like, I'm good for life. I'm good.
Well, I think, yeah, you have to explore the emotion behind it. Cause I think Catherine's onto something with me. It's more like I wanted that emotion. I wanted that, the love and the words of affirmations. But then there's time with hers, acts of service. I think it's a mixture of emotion too, because Catherine will put herself out there to take on 5 million things at one time, doing little charity things and still working and helping her family and helping our family. And you know, just gets a little stressed out and overwhelmed, which is normal. But like she's putting out what she would like to get back too. So, and I know that her mom is, it took me a long time to understand her, to appreciate her. Her and I didn't have the best relationship in our early dating and marriage days. Mm. And her mom kind of, I think she feels like she gets beat up in life by people and doesn't get enough gratitude for what she does. And I'd say it's very true.
Right.
That she feels that way. So it's like an emotional attachment to why we want what we maybe lack, but I don't know. It's interesting.
Right. I know. Yeah. I find it interesting. I mean, my first language of love is physical touch, but I actually tied for acts of service and quality time. So, and I think it's funny because I really appreciate like surprises. Like if you go out of your way to do something or create something or like make a surprise, that is what I really appreciate. So it makes sense to me that I tied for those two things like exactly because that is technically an act of service, but like, I also want to go and spend time with you. So can we like take a trip and you surprise me with a trip? Like that's what I want. But, but I mean, to your point that those are things that I mean, I had quality time with my parents, but because they both worked, it was like, I used to go to the store with them and that was our quality time. I used to run errands with them and that was our quality time. And then, I mean, we were a fairly affectionate, physically affectionate family anyways. So maybe I got both a little bit. I don't know.
Well, and I think your words, your love languages can change.
Oh, for sure.
I've even seen mine shift, I think, in the last couple of years, where then it's like that words of affirmation is like starting to be more drawn. Where at the beginning, I was like, oh God, don't tell me I'm doing a good job or that I'm looking pretty, because it makes me really uncomfortable. Like, okay. And I get like stuttering, jittery. And now it's like, I want someone to be like, oh my God, that looks amazing. You did a great job there. So I think as we grow and as we continue to evolve and change, because that's what life is about. Like if you're not changing, then you're not living correctly.
Right.
And so I think as we grow and we change, those shift. And it's like, okay, now maybe we did receive what we needed in this aspect. So now our body and our mind and our heart and soul are striving for something new.
Yeah. And I think what can be dangerous too is if people have too high of expectations when, or they should try to keep themselves in check. But if I'm doing something for Catherine, and this is something I had to learn a lot through therapy and those discussions, but I would do something for her and maybe I wouldn't get the reaction I was hoping for or really wishing for after I did it. And then it creates a negative emotion or a negative memory, or we would get into a dumb argument, nothing that has a real solution. We were just upset. And so I really had to learn how to, if I'm going to do something that is for her, then do it for her. Don't do it in the expectation that, ooh, all right, something awesome is going to happen, or I'm going to get some brownie points, or she's going to give me a bunch of smooches. It's kind of like, hey, do it for her because she'll appreciate it. And even if she doesn't say thank you, but she smiles or whatever, just know that you did what she would appreciate type situation.
That is such a valid point. I don't know. Are you guys on Clubhouse?
Uh-uh.
No.
Like the cracker?
No. It's a new like social media platform, but it's audio only. So you can kind of like go into these chat rooms type things where a whole bunch of people or just a couple of people can be talking at one time. But I went into one that was labeled, and it's only for iPhone right now because they only have two developers working on it because it's brand new, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's invite only. Like it's kind of hard to get into, but they had a room that was saying that the title of it was, if you're not something to the effect of basically, you're not ready to get married if you're not ready to serve. And that was interesting to me. So I came into the room and was listening and started conversing about it basically, because that makes sense. I mean, if you're not ready to, but it should work both ways, obviously. I think that there are a lot of people who would misconstrue that as like a one-way thing, but it has to work both ways in order for the marriage to work. And so that's essentially what you're saying, is that you have to serve the other person for the benefit of serving the other person, not for the benefit of getting something in return for it.
Right. Marriage is a constant game of compromise, because it can't just always be one side.
Oh, yeah.
One side cannot just be happy. And so that's when you're going into a marriage, it's not just serve like you're a servant to the other one.
Right.
It's serve as in giving up a part of you to love and help and to nourish another one.
Yep.
Well, they always talk about what you put out is what you get back. And even back when Confucius was writing a lot of stuff out there, he even said, a person of humanity who finds happiness and brings it to others brings good of others to completion, and does not bring the bad in others to completion. And to me, it's kind of like, if you're living to kind of serve others, or what can you give back, or what can you do for other people, that's all going to come back to you. So if it's your one and only partner, your true partner in life, your spouse, it's ludicrous to think sometimes, but we're the hardest on them because we say we're comfortable around our spouse, so we can treat them worse than we would treat someone else, instead of treating them better. And we're still working on that, but it just baffles me. Even when I recognize it, I go, why the hell did you act that way or treat her that way? Or so, yeah, what you put out, you'll get back definitely at some point.
For sure. Yeah, no, I came to that. The conclusion that we kind of treat the ones that are closest to us worse than we would treat strangers all the time. And it's just because you're right, because we're comfortable with them. And to some degree, I know, I think when we all first get married, we feel super secure. And so we take advantage of that security, I think, to a degree, mm-hmm. especially in the beginning. I mean, I know we did for sure.
Oh. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it still strikes me as funny how secure we felt and like, and how we treated each other in the beginning
mm-hmm.
because of the security. And I know, like, I know for a fact we were not secure whatsoever in each other, in our relationship. Like, I don't know how we felt so secure and were so insecure at the same time. Like, that baffles me still.
I don't know how to explain it either, but I can tell you just from my own experience, and maybe some of it could be generic, but when you first start dating someone or you first get married, majority of the time, like, you think, well, I mean, everything's locked down. Mm. This is the way that marriages are. This is the way we are. There's no other real option. But then as you start to hang out with other couples, or you start to hang out with other women or other men and listen to their marriages or their problems, you start to realize, or maybe you get treated differently by the opposite sex. And we do an opposite or a episode about that too, where we're talking about when a friendship or something isn't healthy with the opposite sex. But anyways, if they're giving you something that you're not getting at home, I think it brings a certain sense of insecurity out where, oh, well, my spouse isn't doing this for me. And so you build your own mental case in your head about what you might be unhappy with. And then it makes you second guess where it is, instead of that communication and that service and openness. Now you've got this wedge that you've already built without even them knowing it. And then you have to, now you're in repair mode.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So have you guys always lived in the Midwest, or mm-hmm. like with your families and everything? You grew up in the same town and now you're still there, right?
Pretty much.
we live two blocks from where we graduated high school. Yeah. I'm born and raised, and I grew up 7 miles from where we currently live. Mm-hmm. And that's where I live my entire life, where Stephen did switch a couple of towns, but he's always been in South Dakota. Yeah.
Yeah. When I was born, they moved to North Carolina for a few years of my life when my mom went to school, my dad was in the Marines, and then we went back to South Dakota, and then yeah, been here ever since.
Oh, wow.
There. Yeah.
Was he finishing up his Marine career? Did he get out, or how did that happen?
Honestly, that's something that we have to talk about one of these days, because I was born and shortly after, I have to speculate it's money related in college, and that stuff started coming around in the 80s. So she wanted to be a nurse and there were two new parents. So it was like, and they're right out of high school. She was pregnant in high school, but right out of it, I'm sure he thought, well, Marines, I'll go. And he's a mechanic. So he was a helicopter mechanic. And I think he was just on a boat right off of North Carolina. And then, yeah, they could pay for the schooling and stuff like that. He could get like government assistance in building a house back in the Watertown area when we moved back. So I don't know if it was all that kind of stuff, but that's just speculation. Because I've always wondered, that's one of my little things to work through, is why the hell would you have a baby and then go right into the military? But millions, thousands of people do it. And thank God they're out there, because I don't know if I'm strong enough to be in the military.
That's where like Stephen didn't grow up with like that communication.
Right.
And so like he doesn't know the full story. His mom was 16 when she got pregnant. She had him at the end of her junior year of high school. And his dad is, you know, 2 years older. So here they were 17 and 19 when they got married, because she got married on her 17th birthday. And so then it was like just the kind of little rocky when he was that toddler age. And so things from back then aren't really discussed. So there's like a section of history there that he doesn't know about life.
Right. That's so interesting. My mom and I, we always talked. So my dad was never very open about anything. When he passed, his brother actually called me after he had passed away, because he had come up to visit while he was in transition and everything. And then after he passed, his brother called me and was like, hey, So like, I love my brother, but I really feel like I don't know that much about him. And I honestly had to tell him, like, I feel the same way. And it, I don't know if it's just because he didn't really do a whole lot outside of what we already knew, or if he just didn't talk about it, but he sure just didn't talk a lot, for sure, at a bare minimum. And so he didn't talk a lot, but my mom and I, obviously, we were very close. And so we talked a lot. So I knew everything. Like, I knew how they got together, what happened before they got together, because there was a lot of like post-traumatic stress disorder on her part, both when they got together and after they got divorced. And so, like, I knew everything. I can't imagine. But do you still talk to your dad?
Yeah. Ironically, well, interestingly, I don't really believe in irony, but he lives just a mile away from us. So right outside of town. And it's, we still get together and on holidays, probably the last few years, and we text, and it's kind of like we just saw each other yesterday when we get together. But there is definitely something there that there's a wedge or a force in between what I guess I'd picture. And just this week in my little counseling session, that was something I talked about. I said, we've come so far and we've done so much on our podcast, and I've learned so much with articles and books that I think I want to start putting a plan together and just going in and kicking the doors open and saying, let's hash this shit out and figure out what we're going to, we got to either fight it out or we got to cry it out.
Right.
One of the two. So we kind of do, but it's, I think he was so young too. And I was his son, like his one and only son. And then 10 years later, he had a daughter with my stepmom. I think it's kind of like this, like he wanted to be my buddy, but he knew he had to kind of be a hard ass too when we were younger. So just recently, my stepmom told me over Christmas, she said, yeah, you and your dad got to talk it out, yada, yada. But he just, I know he feels bad for a lot of the things when you were younger, but he thought with as screwed up as your mom probably made you, he had to be real tough on you when you moved in. And in my eyes, it's like, that's the opposite of what I needed.
Right.
I was neglected, was verbally abused, drank all the time, or she did. And then I move in with him like, freedom. Yay. Finally, all the fun stuff we do on the weekends, I can do every day. And then it was like, hey, there's rules and stuff. And I was right. Like, what? I just had my first cigarette when I was 10 years old. I'm not like coming here and listening to stuff.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, we do, but it's buddy stuff. It's drinking that kind
of times.
Yeah. We tell memories that the same memories from the last, I don't know, 15 years, probably, or 20 years. Right. And then, yeah, that it's that kind of stuff, which, I mean, at least there is something there. I haven't talked to my mom in over 2 years, probably after our last bout, it was too much. So, And that's been justified, thankfully, through counseling as well for the time being. But that kind of plan will take a long time to develop, I think.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. My dad was like I said, he just didn't talk a lot. So even when I would try to pry with him, he would just give me like one word answers. To some degree, regret not being able to have deeper conversations with him. But at the same time, I've kind of come to terms with the fact that like, it's not 100% my fault. So
Perfect. I was thinking the whole time that that's always been one of my sadness, not like a regret so far or whatever, but it's definitely top of mind that if he dies tomorrow, whatever, soon, I'll be sitting here thinking, gosh, I could have just went over there and just talked to him and all this stuff. But like we talked earlier, it takes two, no matter the context. And I needed to be in a good place too. If I'm way mentally stronger and healthier and more aware of psychology, and I go in there and we hash this stuff out, he gets mad at me or screams and hollers because it's all he knows, I can sit back and you know, just ride it out. And I understand how you feel. Tell me more about that.
Yeah,
you
know, exactly.
that kind of good stuff. And then we're ready to rock and roll. So we're getting close to that, thankfully, but I really resonate with what you say. If something terrible happened in the near future, I'd have those thoughts for sure. But I think I'd have the grace and gratitude to understand it's not all my fault.
Yep. Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, I feel, I have guilt about a lot of things, but fortunately with my I mean, where it comes with my dad, I really don't have a lot with him anyway. So it's mostly about my kids now.
Yep. That's my big deal too. And I know Catherine's a lot like that. Every generation of parents, I think, wants to give them kids better, but we're also very traditional with discipline in a sense. It's an important part of our plan. Right. But aside from that, I mean, they're certainly way more spoiled than we were. Granny gives them McDonald's all the time. And we didn't get McDonald's ever. It was like, we're going to go home and eat something.
I didn't get McDonald's till I was in high school. I can't imagine my kids now that they know it like weekly.
Right?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah. I was just talking to somebody the other day about how spoiled my kids are, especially compared to when I was growing up. And I'm like, I'm a little afraid that they're going to become entitled. But at the same time, like with my son, he's 14. And I swear he is, my husband and I joke that like the universe or God or whoever you subscribe to gave us our son, and he's so well behaved because our daughter is just going to give us like all kinds of hell, basically. Because
he's the youngest.
Yeah. She's older. The youngest, but, and our son is the oldest. Yeah. And she already does. And she's only 7. Like she, oh man, with her, but with my son, he's so responsible. So responsible. Like the other day I went into his room and I was like, hey, when you're on breaks in the middle of classes, cause they have like a 15, 20 minute break in between their e-learning classes right now. I was like, when you're on breaks in classes, can you just like do other work or do something educational? And then I went in there and he was already doing something for another class for a project that's not due for 2 weeks. And so I didn't feel like I could really ask him to do something if he was already doing it.
I'm glad to hear that's more common than what I thought then, because that must be like our oldest is like that. So maybe whether it's we raise him differently on the second round or what the case is, but I know I was tougher on our oldest in the beginning for sure. But definitely are different people.
And we have 2 girls and they have polar opposite of personalities.
Exactly.
They'll both be a challenge in their own way, but there's definitely the maturity level got somewhere in there a little bit different of how the one matured and found her responsibility a lot younger than what our youngest has. But
for sure.
I mean, we don't want them all to be the exact same. Life would be boring if we were all the same.
Oh, for sure.
Gives us our strength as well. So we just have to work through our mommy guilt as we do it.
Exactly. Yeah. And maybe it is like an older child thing. Cause I know that like my parents, when we were growing up, would say similar things about my brother, and he was the oldest and he was very responsible and always, you know, looked out for us and whatnot. So maybe it's just an older kid thing. Maybe like the birth order decides some of that to some degree, but
I think your parental senses are heightened. So you're like afraid of more things and you're really, really focused on making sure you're trying to do the right thing. And then you're like, oh, I want them to grow up and be independent and strong and smart and have everything. And then you get your second kid and you're like, well, I mean, they'll figure it out.
Exactly.
I got to feed them and make sure that I change their diaper, but I mean,
they'll get
she
there.
Fell down. Yeah. She fell down and getting hurt. So
even though I'm the baby of my family, but I don't know if it's quite like that, but there's such a difference. Like my brother and sister are actually adopted. My parents were not able to conceive, weren't conceiving. So they adopted my brother and sister, and magically somewhere 10 years later, they conceived for the first time with me. So there's this gap of 13 and 10 years between my siblings and I. Mm-hmm. So by the time I was a second grader, you know, they're gone.
Right.
They're out of the house. They're at college. They're off getting married. They're already doing those things while I was still young. And so I don't know if it was that way that I was like the least responsible one. It's so hard to know and compare.
Oh no, I know. I had a similar like experience. My brother is 12 years. Well, so I technically have one brother who I didn't even know existed until I was 10 years old, because when I was born, he basically left town and never came back. And so because he was like 17, And then my next oldest brother, he's 12 years older than me, and my sister is 8 years older than me. But by the time I was 6 years old, they had all moved out of the house. So I had them for my like very young years, and they made a huge impact on my younger years. But beyond that, I didn't have them around a lot. They would come back on holidays and such like that, but it's not very often. Mm-hmm. And so same. I somewhat was raised as a youngest child, but I somewhat was also raised as an only child. So
exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
I think as an outside observation that they're all spoiled in their own right, but
we're very sure. Well taken care of. Yes.
Yeah. It's like her older brother, like the dude doesn't want to eat anything. And so Grandma D's throwing together some specialized food, or making sure at least that 90% of the meal can be consumed by him. Mm. And then her sister's just daddy's girl, kind of the farm girl. She works real hard too and whatnot, but she likes to go fishing with dad and gets those kind of things. And then Catherine's just, she's this little Catherine. I don't know how to explain it. It's different for me because I'm looking on the outside in and didn't have that family environment. So I look at it, at one point it was annoying, but her and her mom talk every day, at least a lot of it's to coordinate our kids stuff, but every day, a couple times a day sometimes, and her and her dad have a good relationship too. So yeah, they all got a little bit of good Midwest spoiling in them.
Well, and now it's like he said, we correspond with my mom for our kids never had to go to a daycare. They went to my parents' farm. So they were raised the same way I was, in a sense. They were out chasing cattle and doing stuff from the time they were infants.
Mm.
And they were brought up with my parents and my siblings, who both work at our family farm.
Nice.
And so now that's how they were raised. And so my mom said something the other day about me being spoiled, and she's listing things. I'm like, that's actually all my girls. So I don't know if that's me being spoiled or my kids are the ones that are spoiled. But I guess I'm spoiled in the sense of how well they take care of and what they do for our children.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. My dad's side of the family owned a farm, but he did not ever get along with his parents very well. And so he tried as hard as he could to move very far away many, many times, and succeeded in doing so the majority of the time. But like, we only went there to visit. So, and they were very, like, even my dad said that they were strange. They were just like, they were old school, obviously, and believed that kids should just be seen and not heard type thing. But it was even a little bit more extreme than that. Like, it was complete silence when you were there, pretty much. And it was it just felt awkward to be there. So we didn't go down very often.
Oh, yeah. I think I can relate to some. I remember some of that with my parents being so young, especially with the struggles my mom had. It was like, when it's time to party, then you need to go and zip it and I'm going to do my thing, or just stay home alone, period. So
right.
I think I always try to find a good balance for us on that, because Catherine's wants to spend a lot of time with the kids and make sure they know that she's here and we love them and all these things, which is very important. But I try to remind her and myself to find a good balance but it's okay to ditch them and have a date night once a week, even, or especially now that they're older and we can kind of let them hang out at home. But aside from that, I was even trying to say, hey, we need to go and have some us time and make sure we have kid and family time.
Right. Yeah. I had to learn that as well. Growing up with my parents being single and whatnot, it was like my dad, whenever he had me, he would rarely ever actually have fun or do anything with friends. And my mom, she had me the majority of the time, but I think when she used to go out, she would be gone like all night long. And I wouldn't see her until bare minimum the next morning, but sometimes a couple days later, because she would go out and then go to work and then not come home until the next night type thing. And so, yeah, it was very much like all or nothing with her, sort of. And so I had to learn that with my kids, that like, to let go of the guilt, the mom guilt again, and not have everything be about them 150% of the time, because that's pretty much how I initially started being a parent, was just everything is about them 150% of the time. So I feel you there.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, all right. I think that we've been talking for almost an hour now, possibly. So did you guys have any other tidbits or any other updates that you guys have been working on since we last spoke?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's always kind of evolving, I think. Mm-hmm. The whole Positively Midwest in a brand, if you want to call it that. But So now I'm going to take another step forward and start learning some. Well, I just frankly want to become more educated, but I also want to be accredited in the right thing. So originally it started as a thought out journey of maybe being a life coach and trying to help people once I've seen what I've gone through and come out the other end and us together. But now, after a lot of research and discussions between her and I have found it's kind of a new science, not a new science, but it's a science called positive psychology. And so I found some stuff through Berkeley University and now at some point here, I'll become an accredited positive psychology type, I don't know, counseling coach. I don't know if there's a real label for it, but I'll at least be able to officially say, hey, here's a piece of paper that says, I know what I'm talking about. let me help you get to where I am way quicker, hopefully, than I did. Or at least just turn you around wherever you're at. Give you a little push in the right direction, and then you can do the rest on your own.
Well, congratulations. That's so exciting.
Thank you. So I was doing some of that before we hooked up tonight, and that's where I'll also take a moment to thank my wife a lot for allowing me the privilege of doing that, because I've had 5 million crazy ideas, but I don't know as if I've had something that I've consistently focused on for this long of a time in my life. I don't know if that's ADD or not, but even if it's been guitar, I still play it once a week, but the passion was way stronger in the beginning, and this hasn't seemed to fade. It's only gotten stronger. So lots of gratitude right now.
That's so awesome. Congratulations to both of you. I know so many life coaches because I talk to a lot of them through my podcast.
Yeah.
And that's usually how they start too, is through their own journey. So that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Although I have to say, most of the ones that I know, I think are females. I know a few males, females, so I'm glad that you're doing that. That's great.
That's a lot of Positively Midwest. You know, it's breaking the stigma of mental health, breaking the stigma of like a man's role versus a female role. Mm-hmm. And so he's just breaking that barrier again, knocking down that wall a little bit more to be able to be there for both sides of the fence of genders wanting or seeking some changes. It's all about inspiring others as we take this journey.
That's phenomenal. And I love it. Of course, that's so great. I feel sometimes like I'm in a lot of online spaces, obviously, like we all are, I think, with quarantine. And so I don't know if somehow I've surrounded myself only with females who are life coaches and or hire life coaches themselves, or if there just aren't that many males out there who are doing those things right now, but I hope that it becomes incredibly more or exponentially more common in the coming years. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I noticed that as we try to grow our social media platforms and so on, or even if I'm searching for material to talk about on our show or in the group, it is far more female driven. And mm-hmm. I think Catherine's onto something where it is the stigma. Men still feel like at times women are the weaker sex or the weaker mind, and that one, a man doesn't have to go through that kind of stuff. It's like when women would get their Cosmopolitan and they do their trivia, she's not feeling good, or maybe it's her time of the month or whatever, and so she's just got to do her thing and meet with her girls and have her wine. And it's like, this is way, way more than just coaching you through bad time. It's giving you the tools to change your mindset. And man, if guys don't realize that by now in this modern age with instant information, then you're really, I think, just fooling yourself, because we all could use even one session, you know, in our life.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
There is a gentleman that I interviewed, Dr. Travis Perry. I'm going to connect you guys so that you guys can interview him on your show if you want, but he is a phenomenal. He's a life coach as well, but he is actually only geared towards men, and especially like men in the finance industry, because that's where he originally started, but also because there's a lot of men in the finance industry who take on a lot of stress and even familial stress. So mm-hmm. job stress and familial stress, and they have a tendency to, I guess, feel like everything's bearing down on them type thing, which is understandable. So mm-hmm. yeah, he helps them to kind of work through that and learn how to positively navigate their lives as well. So much like I'm sure you're going to do.
Well, I sure hope so. And if anything, sharing our experiences, I think, has already put us in a good position, and we've gotten more than we ever thought we would already. So it's just, everything is amazing.
Awesome. That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I will let you guys go for the evening. Thank you so much for joining me. If anybody wants to listen to Positively Midwest podcast, go to their website at positivelymidwest.com. And is there any other way that they can get a hold of you? I mean, obviously you're on Facebook. You guys have your group, all the other social media platforms, I presume?
Yeah. Yep. So they can join our group, Positively Midwest podcast. It's the same on Instagram. I've got a TikTok, but I haven't done any videos. We're kind of trying to learn how we can, you know, get a younger demo and start to raise up the youngins, but that's a whole beast. So they can also email us too at positivelymidwest@gmail.com if they got any questions or just want to holler at us. So yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, yeah, add me on TikTok. I'm Teachable Soul on there too. So
perfect.
Help support each other on there.
Definitely. I will. So maybe I can learn some stuff from you like I did with Headliner already, because you're good. So
oh, you did Headliner?
Yep. So I've been slowly posting. Well, all the new ones go automatically because I got the autogram thing or whatever automation. Yeah. But the old ones, I'm a little slower at because you got to use a desktop and stuff. But so I've gotten two of the old ones up and all the new ones for the last, I don't know, 10 episodes or so.
Yay. Congrats.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. All right.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Wouldn't have it any other way.
Well, we're always open to any collaboration or anything that you can think of. Just shoot us an idea and we'd love to work with you.
Awesome. Me too. Thanks. I certainly will. And yeah, vice versa.
Cool.
You have been listening to the Teachable Soul podcast. You can find us on any social media platform, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram as The Teachable Soul, or on Twitter as Teachable Soul. Also, if you'd like to help support the show, you can find us at patreon.com/theteachablesoul. You can also visit our website for more information at theteachablesoul.com.